This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me once again, as he does every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, there's always something interesting going on in your room there. That's quite an attractive woman you've got back there in the red dress on your sofa.
Yeah, Chris. Julian's good friend Lauren is here to stay for a few days. She is out of the Institute for just a while. And he's out hanging out with Miles and asked if Lauren could stay. Luckily, as long as I'm not too loud, she's asleep. She's a little rambunctious, if you know what I mean. So we'll try and keep it down on the show.
All right. I think Jules is just trying to get away from Lauren. And I noticed also that probably. He swapped out a pad. So now she's holding a pad with a picture of you on it all the time.
Yes, it's a little bit creepy to have a stalker, but on a whole, Lauren's nice. She's a good dancer, though, too. She taught me some moves.
Yeah, she really is. Well, of course, Lauren is a character from the episode Statistical Probabilities, and last week we did a commentary for Dr. Bashir, I presume. So this week we're going to follow up the events of that episode and that discussion with a more general discussion about the implications of genetic enhancements, because we found out that Dr. Bashir is enhanced, and it plays into that whole eugenics thing in Star Trek, in the Federation, that concern because of Khan, especially about what happens if you start tinkering around with people and you start enhancing their abilities. And it's generally viewed as a negative thing in Star Trek, but there could be some positive aspects to it as well. I mean, we see some of them in Dr. Bashir himself. So, Matthew, I thought it would be interesting today just to explore this topic a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I thought was really interesting, Chris, when I was thinking about this, we were talking about what we were going to do, and we had this great idea. We should piggyback what we did last week and kind of talk more about this genetic engineering idea. And, these other characters that we get to meet that aren't like Julian. And I was thinking about how difficult it must be just as the doctor who's doing this genetic manipulation, because there's so much, even in Star Trek, about the brain that they don't understand. And right. As we watch each of these different characters, there is something that has gone awry in the DNA resequencing that they've done with these characters. And it just goes to show just how complicated the brain is, that as much as they think they understand and they've got it right with this kind of resequencing, something can go wrong that they don't expect, which is actually, when you're watching Statistical Probabilities, is actually the point of the entire episode, that nobody's smart enough to predict everything. And when it comes to genetically manipulating something at this kind of level, it's not something that you can really control. And the luckiness, and Julian even says it in the episode when he's sitting there talking to everybody, the whole crew's gathered, just how blessed he is, really. how yeah. lucky he is. He, you know, he even says something like, I thank God that, that you know, I didn't end up like they did because it could have happened. So just the idea of just how sensitive this idea is and why they don't want me to people to do it has nothing to do with trying to not have people like Julian who are really smart. It has to do with the fact that most of these people, it doesn't turn out well for human beings. You know, other races like Denobulans are been using genetic manipulation and you know, kind of working with their species for a long time. It right. just doesn't turn out well for humans, though.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing is it's an unknown factor, right? There are definitely some positives that can come out of it, but there are also negatives and they're not predictable, and which also plays into just what we'll talk about later with what the characters that we see in the episode statistical probabilities when they're trying to forecast what's going to happen with the war. There are also unpredictable variables there as well. To recap Dr. Bashir, because you know many of you may be listening to this episode of The Orb out of order and you didn't listen to the previous episode right before this one, you know, we find out in Dr. Bashir, I presume, that Bashir was genetically enhanced when he was a child, and his parents had his mental abilities enhanced. They also, as we find out in statistical probabilities, they also had his eyesight enhanced. They had his eye-hand coordination enhanced, which is, of course, why he can beat Miles at darts all the time, right? But so these were some of the changes that were made to him. And as I said in the last show, I can completely understand the actions of his parents in looking at their son and seeing the challenges that he was facing and knowing that this is going to affect him for the rest of his life. And there's an opportunity for them to do something to correct it and to give their son a chance at a normal life and a better life. And of course, remember, in the Star Trek universe, people are living to be like 120, 130 years old. So we're talking about really looking out long term. And so these are the actions that his parents took. And Matthew, you mentioned that, you know, it didn't turn out so well for these other people. Bashir says when he's sitting in that room with the rest of the crew, with Sisko and his crewmates, and he says, my parents found a decent doctor to perform the DNA resequencing on me. These four weren't so lucky. He says that, but I'm thinking that I don't even think it's so much a matter of them finding a decent doctor and these four people had bad doctors. I think it's just even in the best hands, mm-hmm. you never know how yeah. it's going to turn out. And that's why this is something that is frowned upon within the Federation.
Yeah, and definitely how, you know, what I was just was talking about is it is so tricky when it comes to this idea of working with these things that as much as they've studied the brain by even Star Trek times, they still don't completely understand everything. And changing that, it's not you know, a foolproof thing. You can't just say, oh, well, we did it with Julian, so we could do it with Lauren or Jack or any of these other people. It doesn't work like that. And anything yeah. can go wrong. And, you know, you get the kind of issues that, you know, Serena faces, you know, where it's gone so badly, she can't even speak to anyone because she's kind of locked in her own little world. Mm-hmm. She can kind of understand. She can kind of interact a tiny bit. On a whole, she's really locked in a completely different universe, unable to get out, even though she is a genius, as we find out later in the episode, that she, you know, here in statistical probabilities, she's a genius in this episode. It just takes so much for that to be able to kind of come out of her.
Yeah. You know, another thing that Bashir said that's interesting that ties into whether or not what happened to these four characters is a common outcome of genetic enhancement or not, because in that same conversation there with the crew, Bashir says that they all suffered unintended side effects. By the time they were 5 or 6 years old, their parents had to come forward and admit that they'd broken the law so their children could get treatment. But there wasn't much the doctors at the Institute could do for them. Cases like theirs are so rare, there's no standard treatment. And it kind of implied that when genetic enhancement work is done, what happened to these four characters doesn't happen very often. Like, this was actually an unusual situation.
Well, you know, you can read it that way, but the way I was reading it, Chris, was actually that there are so few cases of genetic manipulation that are known of, and that the Institute has any idea of, that when they work with them, it is so rare they don't know what to do. So that they either end up like Julian, or they end up like, you know, these people here, and their parents just keep them hidden. And these parents just apparently, it was something they couldn't handle. So that's kind of the way I had read it. But, you know, you can read it either way, and either way, it's kind of vague, compelling storytelling. And it does. It's one of those things in the episode, it just kind of leaves it to your imagination and let you kind of run with it. And in either sense, it's not something that's a really happy outcome for anyone. Because you either end up living like Julian, where you're having to live a lie your whole life, like he was for most of the time that we've known him on the series, or you end up like these characters where you are taken to an institute because they don't know how to deal with you because something has gone wrong.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about implications of genetic enhancement a bit, and still staying with the same conversation that I'm talking about with the crew members. Worf makes a comment that, you know, one of the dangers of this is that parents would feel the pressure to enhance their children so that their children could keep up. And that reminded me of the movie Gattaca, where there was this pressure, right, to for your children to keep up. There's this danger, and I think this is a real one today. I think as we learn more about DNA and we start to gain the abilities to manipulate the way that the doctor did to Bashir in Star Trek. I mean, not on that level yet, but our technology is definitely headed in that direction. And I think that I'm certain that at some point in the future, especially if we're talking about a few hundred years out, I mean, this kind of stuff that's done to Bashir will definitely be a capability that we're going to have at some point. And what you see in these cases is I think there would be this pressure where the danger is that if you're normal, and by normal, I just mean natural, like there's no modification done to you. So maybe normal is not the best word to use here. But if you're purely born of nature and your parents' genes and whatever happens when they come together happens, there's just a danger that you're going to become like the lower rung of society. And only the people whose parents have the money to enhance them are going to be those who have good lives. And it was interesting to hear Worf say that just from a Klingon's point of view, but he's absolutely right.
Well, and it is the definite danger that you run into. That whole conversation there was done so well because everybody is dancing on eggshells around Julian because they're talking about a really important issue and a scary issue for them because they aren't like Julian. And in a lot of ways, Julian is superior to them in mental ability and in physical ability in a lot of ways, and could surpass any of them. And yet, he's also their friend, somebody they've known for a long time. And really, he hasn't changed all that much other than that he can now show off how smart he is in front of them. And that for them, he is an exception because they know him. You know, they fear the unknown is what it is. And so, you know, I thought it was interesting that even as Miles slowly kind of gets to know these other characters, he's a little bit more comfortable with them, but he's still kind of at arm's length with these other genetically enhanced characters because he does kind of fear who they are because they don't have that normal sense of control. We would call normal sense of gold that Julian does. They don't have that social cue knowledge that Julian does. They don't have the ability to have that, and they're mental capacity has kind of had that taken away from them because they're so far above that in mental ability. And so, yeah, it's just a very interesting thing. And that conversation they have, I loved, one caveat, I just love that they have that scene. The fact that the entire Deep Space Nine cast is sitting there, all the main characters of Starfleet and the, you know, Kira and Odo, all sitting there talking as if it was just normal for them to hang out all the time. Mm-hmm. Awesome to see that. But two, just the fact that they're having this really important conversation and they kind of get to that end point where Julian has to leave and they know that they may have kind of hurt his feelings. But at the same time, he's like, no, it's okay. I understand what you're saying. And he doesn't really take offense to it. I thought was kind of was just a great, well-done scene kind of dealing with this very sensitive issue.
Yeah. I feel like Julian is an exception in that case, though, in his ability to see things that way. Now, as this episode goes on, we do see him sort of succumb to what I see as one of the downfalls of mm-hmm. the genetically enhanced people in Star Trek universe. But as we're talking about implications here and negative ones, I think what this leads to, what I see anyway, is, and you were describing the inability of characters like Jack and Patrick and Lauren, especially, and I guess I wouldn't include Serena here because she's sort of almost in a comatose state, but their inability to have normal social interactions with others. And I see the possibility if we were to enhance ourselves, we would reach a point where maybe our ability as humans to feel empathy for others, mm-hmm. to have the type of social interactions that are required as beings for our own health, our own mental health, we would lose the ability to have those connections with people. Hmm. I believe, and the loss of empathy would lead us to things like what we saw. You know, you and I on Literary Treks, we've been talking about the IDW Khan series with the backstory of Khan in the Abramsverse. But what we see in there are the events of the eugenics wars, and we see what happened to those enhanced people as they came into positions of leadership and how they lacked the ability to have empathy towards others. And there is a violent tendency that comes out of a superiority complex. And I see that a little bit here with Jack as well. Like when Jack goes up, when he wants that noise to stop and he grabs mm-hmm. Serena's throat and he yep. says, "I'll snap her neck." I was immediately thinking, you know, that's what Khan would do as well, yeah. as, you know, snap someone's neck. And Jack backs down, you know, he never had any actual intention of harming Serena, I don't think. But he backs down very quickly from it. But just the fact that he went there makes me feel like this sort of violent tendency is possibly mm-hmm. a natural byproduct of mm-hmm. genetic enhancement that leads to this greater intellect.
Well, and this is something that, you know, you might not think about just because we think of things a little differently, but I was thinking about the spiritual implications in this conversation that he has with Jack, because he says later on to Jack, "We're not gods." And Jack says, "Well, we're the next best thing." Mm-hmm. And the moment that anybody starts to think that they're God or the next best thing is when you really are in trouble. The God complex, it's quite dangerous. And humans have been playing it ever since we've been created. So it's just what we do. We want to be God. We want to be in control. And Julian and these characters are smart enough to be able to think of things in a way that other people can't. But as the end of the episode proves, they're obviously not smart enough to necessarily predict what's even going to happen with the people in the room that they're in. And so yeah. there's always a limitation, no matter how smart you are. And, you know, you're not omniscient or omnipresent or any of those things. So unless you are, like, say, a Q or the prophets, then you really have a limitation to where yeah. your knowledge and can take you. And what I loved about, you were talking about where Julian ends up, is that even though he's tempted to go along with it, he still has that whole other side of him that he can't let go of, which is he is a Starfleet officer. He is bound by the rules and the regulations of society, and he doesn't take those into his own hands even when he thinks he knows better. And that's the huge difference is he still has that part of him that they don't.
Right. And as you mention this feeling like your guide, it reminds me of going back to TOS, mm-hmm. where no man has gone before. Mm-hmm. That's what happens to Gary Mitchell.
Yes.
It's sort of the evolution of that. And speaking of TOS, the other a character that Jack reminded me of a bit is Charlie X.
Yes, yes, I can definitely see that. That character who has all of this power and has no idea how to use it. Yeah, that's huge. I not thought about that, but that is a good callback.
Yeah, it's the not knowing how to use it, right? It's he just felt kind of confused by it, but he actually mm-hmm. has some abilities. At least in this case, mental
right.
abilities.
Right.
So these are what we see as negative implications of genetic enhancements. But what about some positive implications? You know, we've seen how the enhancements that Julian received have helped him be a better doctor, which benefits all the people who he directly cares for. And it benefits the people of the Federation because he's doing research as well.
Yeah, I thought that this is the thing that is really interesting is that Julian is the only genetically enhanced character that we see in Star Trek that's on the quote-unquote good side. And it does make for a really compelling argument because, you know, this kind of intellect we also see in, like, say, a Vulcan, like Spock, really smart, able to think of things in ways that a human can't. And so we see the way that intelligence can really play out when tempered with wisdom and all these other things. And so I think what it makes is it makes Julian unique in the Star Trek universe and special. And I applaud Star Trek for holding the sanctity of life high enough to say, we don't need to be screwing around with our genetics in this way because it's dangerous. And there's only one exception so far. And even him, he realizes that he could have ended up just like Jack or, you know, Lauren or Serena. Yeah. It's really well done. But I don't know, Chris, what do you think about that of, you know, the good part?
Well, I feel like Julian embodies the potential of genetic enhancement to take the human species further than we can go naturally. Because the thing is that, I mean, obviously our brains have evolved over time to the capacity that we have now, but evolution is a very slow process. And there are, I feel like there are limits to where we're going to go through natural evolution. I feel like we may not be able to reach our potential just by, you know, letting nature take its course. We're not going to be satisfied. I mean, look at how short our attention span is these days on anything and how much we want the new thing now. And our scientific advancement is picking up pace all the time, our technological advancement. I think the urge for us to artificially enhance ourselves is going to be too great for us to ignore. So the question is, well, is it going to destroy us or is it going to benefit us? But I think that if it's done correctly, it certainly can benefit us and it can allow us to go places that we could never mm-hmm. go otherwise in terms of exploring space and ensuring the survival of our species, which is, I mean, face it, if we stay where we are right now, we're doomed. You know, we are, as a species, we will become extinct because eventually our sun isn't going to support us anymore.
Right.
So we have to continue to expand. And I think that using artificial enhancement is going to be the way that we end up expanding our potential. within Star Trek, I think that the only character we see who has been successfully enhanced like this is Dr. Bashir. But of course, I think that's a side effect of the fact that enhancements and because of the eugenics wars and such have been such a taboo topic within Star Trek and within the Federation. We've never had those characters developed, and the writers decided, as we discussed last week, at the last minute, to make Julian genetically enhanced. Since he was already a main character on Deep Space Nine, since he had already been on the show for 4.5 years, they couldn't make him genetically enhanced and make it turn out badly for him. You know, it had to be positive for him so that he could continue to be part of the crew. And so my feeling is that there probably are plenty of other people within the Federation who turned out the way Julian turned out. They turned out well. They're well-adjusted people. They use their enhanced mental abilities to benefit the citizens of the Federation. We've just never seen them. We've only been shown the negative consequences within Star Trek.
Yeah, that's a good possibility that that's the case. Whether or not, you know, you were talking about the idea that we ourselves, do we start genetically enhancing people, and does that offer a key for us? And maybe, but also have to say too, we have a short attention span these days because people are dumb. I mean, we spend all our time watching short YouTube clips with cats and, you know, 140 characters on Twitter and eating food that's ready in 2 minutes. I mean, we've created these lives for ourselves that don't allow us to think about things deeply because everything is a soundbite culture. We live in a 24-hour news cycle that doesn't even understand what news is anymore. Right. So we have created this for ourselves. We could also uncreate it too, because I think that we might be surprised if we met, say, a farmer from early America and his vocabulary. We wouldn't understand him. Know why? Because he's way ahead of us and he never went to school. But he could read and he done read good. So,
I do agree on that. I do think that our culture today with social media and 24-hour news cycles and all the entertainment that we have with us has taken us away from learning and improving ourselves. And we've just kind of become comfortable with, like, this is how it is. And as long as we go through the day this way, we're comfortable with it.
Yeah. I think it makes for a really interesting conversation of what do you do with this. And so,
well, let's talk more about these characters here and what happens in this episode. And one of the inspirations for statistical probabilities was that Ira Stephen Bear wanted to explore the implications, as we're discussing here, of the genetic enhancements that were done to Dr. Bashir. And an inspiration for it was the very famous series by Isaac Asimov, Foundation, which has 7 books, but it's mainly the original trilogy is sort of the key to it. And what we see play out in this episode is pretty much exactly what plays out in Foundation. Now, in Foundation, there is the mathematician, Harry Seldon, who developed a branch of mathematics that it was called psychohistory. And it was just a way of thinking about how kind of had like the laws of mathematics or the laws of nature have events flow through time based on masses. So when you reach a certain mass, you can predict what's going to happen. And the little events and the little individual people, they don't matter. And the further out, and this is what Bashir says to Sisko, actually, when they're in Sisko's office, the further you go through time, the more accurate the predictions become. And this is, it's a great concept and a great story by Isaac Asimov. And I love the fact that they picked this up and they put it into Deep Space Nine and found a way to tie it in to Dr. Bashir and to tie it in to these other characters and to tie it into the Dominion War.
Yeah, it really works so well. And it's awesome that they did. I love the Foundation series. It's so, so well done. I mean, Asimov is a genius when it comes to science fiction, and his idea here is, I think, a really incredible one. The sense that we can predict the course of the future in these big, large, sweeping events, so that they could predict the first foundation and the second down foundation and the new empire and how all this would work out, and that you'd end up having to wait hundreds of years for it to happen, but it was going to happen, and so it was worth waiting for, and all of these kind of things, and really putting that in this episode, this idea that the Federation would fall to the Dominion, and then in a couple of hundred years, things would pan out, basically.
Right. Yeah, Bashir says that there would be, he says, either way, we're looking at 500 years of Dominion rule.
Right. Which, is a scary thought, and the idea that you would just surrender to make that better is an even more interesting thought. That you would save more lives like that, and you would be protecting and preserving life. The flaw that and what I like that they point out in the episode is obviously that one person, and maybe this, yeah, I guess this is just what we always think of is the idea that won't go away. One person can change the course of the future,
mm-hmm.
and I think that as you look throughout history, you really have seen that happen. One person has changed the course of history in many different places. And so using, though, this huge sweeping idea from one of the masters of science fiction is brilliant.
Right. Yeah. The talking about the one person changing, the thing about the psychohistory mathematics in Foundation is that while it's accurate on a large scale, it's error-prone on a small scale. And that's what they tie in here with the fact that Jack doesn't account for the actions of Serena.
Right.
But overall, like just the parallel here, what they talk about, how 900 billion casualties will take place in this war. He says if we surrender, no one dies, which of course I think is not true. But anyway, he talks about I said earlier 500 years. What he actually says is 5 generations. So it's not necessarily 500 years, but 5 generations of Dominion rule. And he talks about how a rebellion will form and Earth will be the center of it. And that gets to be so vague where you're like, okay, well, that's one possible outcome. And I think that's what Sisko was thinking, is that's one possible outcome. But in Foundation, Harry Seldon predicts that the Galactic Empire, which covers the whole galaxy, is going to collapse. And in that situation, there's going to be Dark Ages that last for 30,000 years.
Yeah. So
that's a lot more than 5 generations. But there we're really talking about on the long scale. And then eventually there will be another empire, which is what Bashir's talking about here, where there will be rebellion and, there will be a new federation will come about and such. But what Seldon sees is the fact that there is a way that you could take actions that would reduce this 30,000-year Dark Ages down to only 1,000 years, which is, of course, still a long time, but it's much, much preferable over mm-hmm. the 30,000 years. Yep. And so we see here the genetically enhanced characters within the Federation determine that they're going to use their abilities mm-hmm. to somehow minimize the war. Like if they can't prevent it, they would just want to at least minimize the deaths. And so Jack is going to take things into his own hands and have that meeting with Damar and Wayun.
Which, from his point of view is he's doing the best thing, the right thing, the thing that he should be doing. Yet on the other side, Bashir and anybody else would basically see it as treason. No matter what you think is best, this is not the decision for you to make. It's the decision for the people in charge. And that's the other thing that's so interesting about these characters is they don't have any idea of those social customs, those social norms, the way society is set up. And again, they see themselves as kind of being godlike, and therefore they are over everyone, and therefore everybody else should listen to them, really kind of getting into that Khan mentality and, you know, such the danger. And so instead of using your gifts really at that point for the betterment, you're basically imposing your will on people without giving them any choice.
Yeah. And I think that what Jack's trying to do here, and even Bashir, and this is the thing where I mentioned earlier that Bashir, he starts to fall for it a bit as the episode goes on. I mean, he has control because he's a Starfleet officer, and he's able to come out of it. But there is a while where he really gets caught up with these other enhanced people, and he even tells Sisko, "We have to surrender. We have no option but to surrender." And everyone else thinks he's crazy. You know, Sisko thinks he's crazy. It's like, okay, I mean, I see what you're saying, but surrender is not an option.
Right.
And I think it highlights, well, you mentioned Khan, which is what I see as a downfall of the enhanced characters is the superiority complex. And again, I mentioned the comic earlier, the Khan comics, and we see that with all the enhanced leaders that had taken over the world in the eugenics wars, that because they see themselves as so far above ordinary people intellectually, they are unable to take into account the actions, unpredictable actions of individuals, which is what plagues Seldon's mathematics in Foundation. It's what plagues Jack and the others here in their forecasts of how the Dominion War is going to go. And it even plagues Khan, both in the primetime line and in the Abrams verse, where he just doesn't predict the actions. You know, it's just like in Into Darkness, Khan couldn't predict what Spock did with the torpedoes because he just didn't think that was possible. So I see that as a downfall here of the genetic enhancement. And I guess if we were to do this to ourselves and that's where our future went, we're going to have to find a way to overcome that, because Jack and Laura and Patrick here, especially Jack, and even Bashir, when he falls for it, they start thinking like computers instead of like people.
Yeah.
They're so caught up in the numbers. They're so sure they're right. They're so smart. They couldn't possibly be wrong. And so you start thinking like a computer, and you lose, in the enhancements, you lose what makes you human. And the outcome, I think maybe not in every single situation, but more often than not, I think the outcome will turn out to be bad.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because that's in the end, what is able to pull Julian back is humanity. I mean, and his humanity is driving him because he's wanting to save as many lives as possible, but it's also what enables him to stop and say, okay, I am really not above anybody else here. And therefore I can't impose my will on anyone. And even if I think this is right, I still have to abide by everything else that I hold dear, which is what I'm a part of, Starfleet, the Federation, this society. And I think that that's a key to the him as a character, and really what made this so cool is because even at the end, you know, you can see Jack kind of come around because he says, look, if we can find a way to beat the Dominion, will you listen? And Bashir says, well, yeah, of course, I will. And so you can even see that even Jack and the rest of the characters there have made that turn to say, okay, well, we see where society is going. How can we help then to make that happen? That, you know, how do we be productive members of society in that? And I think that was a neat place to end the episode.
It was, because that gives you hope that there is a way, that if we were to start modifying ourselves, there's hope that there would be a way to temper it so that it would be beneficial. Yeah. Well, do you have any final thoughts on this topic of the implications of genetic engineering and genetic enhancement? Maybe, you know, whether it would be positive or negative for us in the future, or?
Yeah, I think, more than anything, and if this episode is any indication, is that it's something that cannot be taken lightly at all. It needs it's ground that we have to tread very carefully on. I definitely, and when I look at the world today, we're nowhere near ready to even be thinking about this kind of thing, because I just don't see that we can be trusted,
yeah,
with this kind of scientific process.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we're nowhere near ready to be thinking about doing this kind of thing. I do think we are at a point where we should be thinking about the implications of it and how we would handle it when the time comes, because I do believe that the time will come. I do believe our future is either with genetically enhancing ourselves as biological beings or in cybernetics, where we slowly begin to implant technology into ourselves, mm-hmm. which could eventually lead us to becoming either us becoming largely artificial, or simply we will create artificial life forms who eventually will supplant us. That's just where it feels like that's where the evolution, both of technology and biology, is headed for us in the long term. And there are going to be questions that we do have to answer. And I think that what we see here in Star Trek is it shows us the danger of it. It does show us in Julian how it can turn out well, but it shows us in other situations very often, not only in statistical probabilities, but with Khan and others, how it can go wrong. So I think it is a big topic that Star Trek started addressing long ago and is going to become more and more real to us in the coming decades and certainly in the coming century. Well, Matthew, it's been an interesting discussion. I'm glad we had a chance to follow up on last week's show and talk about this a little bit more and explore it. But we've been talking about a lot of other things on the network this week as well. So here are some more things that you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The unmade Starfleet Academy movie.
You know, even on paper. Okay, do we want to do the script, which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek V, or do we want to do the script, which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek II?
Earl Grey.
The ships of TNG.
Oh, no, it's one ship that splits into three parts, just like the D is one ship that splits into two parts. It's not a Voltron, it's one ship.
An owl formed the saucer.
The orb.
Dr. Bashir, I presume commentary.
I know.
It's just awesome.
The look on Sisko's face the whole time. He's just looking at Zimmerman like, all right, you're a piece of work, aren't you?
Exactly.
To the journey!
Seska.
And obviously, Seska couldn't let go.
No.
And she proved that by having his child against his will.
Yeah. Now, here is the Maury Show twist of the future. He does not impregnate her. She impregnates herself with his DNA, or so she thought. But he is not the father.
The ready room.
But it's also really gloomy, and it's sad. I never want to go back there. I don't want to, like, re-experience that. Like, just the visual candy of being able to go outside and talk to the Vorta and... Wow, I maybe didn't phrase that properly. I meant the change in color and lighting.
Oh.
I did not mean, but she's a very attractive.
I thought you were
Vorta.
Talking about Kimana.
She is fetching. No? She's a fetching lass.
Warp 5.
Zindi Evolution.
Well, I think maybe Okapa and Insectoid are two races that could have a life together. You know, you've got the 9-year lifespan of the Okapa. You've got the 12-year lifespan of an Insectoid. If they meet at the right time, it could be a beautiful love story.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Ira Steven Bitter's Star Trek.
And it's the first time I heard him say something that he said several times over the years is, you know, one day when we're not the middle child, we're not the stepchild, people are going to go, holy crap, look at DS9.
Literary Treks.
Slings and Arrows, A Sea of Troubles.
You see in this book, too, that Picard is facing this melancholy because they've been worried about the Borg, and now the Dominion is on the horizon, and there's these two things, and obviously this is before First Contact, so that hasn't happened yet. And Picard seems to be kind of weighed down in this story in some ways.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows. And you can find them in a variety of places, including on iTunes, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can download and stream from the website. Lots of ways for you to get the shows. So check them out and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. And for everyone listening, if you have thoughts on this topic, Matthew and I would love to hear from you. And there are a variety of ways you can do that. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about this or anything about Deep Space Nine or really anything about Star Trek. There are sections there for just about anything you can think of with all the different series. And also you can find us in social media on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, when you're not cooking up a plan to make yourself the smartest man in the world, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, I'm already the most interesting man in the world. And so,
stay thirsty, like my friend.
Exactly. If you'd like to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at MattRushing02. And then, of course, Chris, we do Literary Treks, where we talk books and comics together. So it's another great place to find me. And I also do the book reviews on the website as well. And so all of those places, great places to find me or interact with me. Now, Chris, when you're not looking for Lauren to give you new dance steps, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me, of course, with Beverly, where I'm learning dance steps.
Hey, hands off, buddy, hands off.
I didn't think you'd like that.
No.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username. And you'll also find me on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And you'll find me elsewhere on the network, of course, Matthew, with you doing Literary Treks, and on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise, and also on my interview show, Matter Stream. I'm in a lot of different places on the network, so check out all of those if you're interested. And also, Matthew, we should remind everybody as we close out the year here that this is going to be the last episode of The Orb for 2013. We're going to be taking a few weeks break here. Of course, Matthew has holidays, as most of our listeners in the States do here at the end of December. For me in Japan, the beginning of January is our big holiday period. So we're going to take a few weeks off. We're going to be back on January 15th with a new orb. So I hope during that time you'll enjoy the back catalog of episodes of The Orb. Also, we've got lots of Deep Space Nine talk over on the Ready Room as well. Lots of episodes of DS9 there. And so you can check out the website. We'll be tweeting some stuff as well to share some of the back catalog with everyone during the holidays. All right, Matthew, one more thing before we let everyone go. We'd like to ask you again to please support our sponsor for this week's show. Your support of our sponsor makes it possible for us to bring The Orb to you every week. And the sponsor for this show is Audible. Audible.com is the premier source for audiobooks. They have over 150,000 titles to choose from there on the site. They have new titles coming every week. Classics, bestsellers, some of the most famous Star Trek books. They have some DS9 books over there as well, such as Warped. I think Emissary novelization is there as well, I believe. They're read by Armin Shimerman, Nana Visitor, Rene Auberjonois. Great stuff over there. And as a Trekfm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with the 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and get your free audiobook today. That helps us bring The Orb to you, and we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. And lastly, there's one more way you can directly help us keep The Orb coming to you each week, and that is by adopting some aliens. We have original alien illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. They're available as badges and as art prints. You can mix and match, choose which ones you want in which format. We have different levels of contributions for you to choose from as well. And your donations help us pay for the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring The Orb and all of our shows to you each week. And you'll find these at trek.fm/donate. So go over there and check them out, and we really thank you for helping us keep the network going. Well, Matthew, I have really enjoyed talking DS9 with you on The Orb this year, and I can't wait for 2014. And of course, also, I really appreciate everyone out there who's listening, because without you guys, we really wouldn't have any reason to do this show other than just to talk to ourselves every week.
Chris, it has been a blast being a part of Trek FM for the last year. I can't believe that I've been doing this for a year. And then, of course, you know, as we always say, for the last time this year, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time, and next year, as we gaze into the orb.